So last tip for our listeners, if you go to your LinkedIn profile and you see that William has viewed your account, be worried.
Yeah, very worried.
Oh, if you've hired me, I can't do anything illegal.
Did you wink? Did I see you wink when you did that?
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin and special guest who I'll reveal shortly. How's it going, Donna?
It's good. I'm surprised to learn that it was the end of the week because it still feels like Tuesday.
Does it feel like the end of the world for me? But yes, I'm glad it's the end of the week.
Yeah, I think all the days ran together for me this week, but I'm happy to know I'm at the end of it, so mm-hmm. I can start trying again on individual days.
Yeah, well, if you're like me, the end of your work week just signals the beginning of another week. It's like the week of working at home, but I only get 2 days to do all the work.
I know, right?
And then
that's
I'm like,
what weekends
Monday.
Are for. Is yeah, get your work
by,
done.
By Sunday work. Afternoon, I'm like, gosh, I wish it was Monday so I could get a break. Oh, man. So today we're going to be talking about social engineering. And we've got William Price with us. And that's kind of what he does for a living. He gets to trick people into doing all kinds of crazy stuff, which I'd love to talk to his wife to find out, you know, is that how they met? Did he trick you? Did he social engineer you? You didn't know you were.
No, I went to high school with her.
Oh, okay. So she knew better. So, you know, it's got to be interesting living with him because, you know, he's probably always trying to social engineer his way to get what he wants from her.
Well this morning, the garage door was opening spontaneously. And she's complaining, what's wrong with our garage doors? I said, oh, it's probably one of those NSA listening devices. They're known to open garage doors. She looks at me like I came from the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is, though, tell me this. Like, with me, I'm the one that's paranoid because I know everything that's happening. And my wife is more the, you know, let's just hand out our passwords to everybody because, you know, everybody's good and they would never do anything wrong.
Or there's an app for that.
Yeah. Check out this new.
Anytime she complains about something, I saw the maps. That's.
Yeah. Yeah. I see my wife over there playing some game and I'm like, how many games have you downloaded to that phone? Oh, every time I see a game, I download it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Make sure you're on a different segment of our network. But we're gonna talk with William and find out some of the things that he's seen and tricks people are falling for. We talk about social engineering a good bit here. You know, for the record, we stay away from politics. we'll find out what he's seeing out there. Donna, you have any announcements you want to make before we dig into William's head?
Oh no, I want to go see what's in William's head because, if we have announcements, they're not coming to me right now. We talked about that earlier that we have trouble coming up with words like normal day to day words.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's do it then. So William, let's start out with,
Who are you and where did you come from?
Yeah. I know you're about ready to change the name of your business, so I guess you maybe want to do both in case, you know, people listen to it later.
Yeah, so I am William. I am the founder, lead consultant at CyberX, cyberx.tech. We are, like you mentioned, in the middle of a rebrand. We are becoming Bastion Cyber Group, so we'll be bastioncyber.io. That's coming Q4. My background is my father worked in IT, so I grew up around computers. He's been in IT since the 90s, so I knew orange, white, orange, green, white, blue. I knew that since I was like 8, right?
And for those of you who don't know, just, you know, some of our listeners aren't technical. He's describing the pinout on a network cable.
Ethernet.
Yeah. The cables inside the cable you know about.
Yeah. Yeah. When you punch down your own cables, you have to know what color scheme to put them in. Side story, the very first time I did one, I just thought all the cables had to match on each end. I didn't know you had to actually have a way to do them. And I'm like, why is this cable not working? The colors match on each end. Yeah, it did not work.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, I got red, white, orange, red, white, and then green, and then, oh, wait, yeah. That's exactly what I would used to do, is just sit there over them, staring at them for the longest time. And then not remember which order I'm supposed to put them in.
Yeah.
Which is why I said this is not for me.
Yeah. So I grew up around computers, always playing games, trying to fool the computer, do stuff. When I graduated high school, I did dev work for a few years. I developed websites and apps until a friend of mine got hacked.
Oh.
And I was extremely intrigued by how they got hacked. Of course, they came to ask me questions. I was the most technical of the bunch. And that set me on a curious path towards cybersecurity. And then I found an article talking about pen testers. People got paid to hack. And I said, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do. So I got a degree, a bunch of certifications, worked as a pen tester for a few years, and I started my own agency. We did pen testing, small, like most companies do, for a few years. Then I was on a job. I guess I'll tell the story. So it was a bank. They had 16 stories. Floor 3 was the guest floor. So I'm on the guest floor sniffing Wi-Fi traffic, seeing what I can capture. And I found a bunch of MAC addresses. So I figuring this is a sophisticated bank. They probably had a network access control in place, allowing who can get to the network. So I wrote down all the MAC addresses. And I was done. Next morning, I got onto a floor, which is a whole nother story, how I get on floors.
You've seen Spider-Man,
plugged
right?
Into a port. And I faked my MAC address on my computer to look like this one of those I had found. Turns out the MAC address I found was the CISO of the bank.
Oh.
He was connecting his iPad to the guest network when he would come down to the guest floor for meetings. So because it was his MAC address, I plugged in, boom, I had company-wide access on their network. And it was game over. I basically took the bank down. Data center came to a screeching halt because I mistyped a command. That was no fun. It scared them pretty well. So they spent $100,000 on a network access control solution that was going to be certificate-based instead of MAC address-based. So the next year, we had another pen test for this people, and sure enough, they had their certificate-based, so MAC address didn't work. But I'm walking around the guest floor, moving furniture around, looking for ports, hiding shadows so nobody sees me, thinks anything of me. And I found a port open. I said, And then there was this like little eight port Netgear plug into it. I said, I know this thing doesn't support network authentication. So I plug into this and boom, I'm on a network. I start digging around. Turns out it was a small network. It was segmented, but it had a way out. It was the network for they have these room booking devices on the wall on their conference rooms. Uh-huh. And you can save the room. All right. So the underlying operating system was Windows NT.
Nice.
And it had a web server, because that's how you use the display, and it had anonymous root FTP access. So they sort of, this port was my way in. So what I ended up doing, I got to other computers, added some back doors, and because they couldn't reach the internet, the firewall is blocking my command and control server. I set up sort of a relay on this IoT device, and those computers would talk through that IoT device out to my command and control. So
nice.
They spent $100,000 on a network access control, but what good did it do them? They didn't lock down all their ports. Again, basic controls is what's getting everybody in trouble. So I'm thinking, I'm in my hotel after the day, I'm thinking, these guys spent $100,000, and what good did it do them? Same week, a friend of mine who had a small manufacturing company got hacked, and they called me and were asking some questions, and then trying to find software solutions for them. Vendors, the ones I like, wouldn't even talk to you if you didn't have X thousand amount of computers.
Yeah.
And I just started realizing how neglected the small and mid-size market is. vendors don't want to help them. Security consultants don't want to help them because they don't pay the big money like the big companies do. And I decided for my agency, we were going to change our focus and specifically focus on small and mid-sized companies. So that's my story, and that's what we do. We focus on security assessments, pen tests, social engineering, risk assessments, all of that type of stuff.
And so basically, you're like us, you worry about the small and medium businesses that everybody forgets about because they're the ones, oh, they don't have any money, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? That becomes the Achilles heel.
Small businesses are like 60% of our economy.
Yeah.
If they all got hacked at once, it's not going to happen, but we'd be in big trouble if all of our small businesses couldn't stand.
Yeah.
Well, and if you attack them, that's the way in.
Yep.
You know, so, I'm starting to get calls from folks that they're a tiny business, but in order for them to do their clients' work, you know, the B2B supply chain is starting to get monitored because of that.
Yep.
So there's going to need to be a change in how we help small business, but.
So William's the guy that walks around the party and says, "Your zipper's down." That's kind of the way I tell people is like, look, you know, I'm telling you where your vulnerabilities are and where things are potentially hanging out and that you need to address. And so, and that's a big thing because a lot of people have solutions in place because they think, oh, if I buy this piece of software, it's secure or compliant or whatever. And they don't realize that most things have to be configured properly first before they will be secure or compliant. And that doesn't happen that often. Even when IT puts it in, they sometimes don't configure it properly, or they configure it and say, all right, we'll get back to it. And that never happens.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm only going to do this for a minute, open this up for a minute, and then they never close it.
Yeah.
So I do want to point out that William does do another thing, which is to teach a class, because if you're on YouTube right now, you're seeing that he is the class instructor, not William Price. Oh. So we are in class.
He's like, I'm going to school, you fools. I'm going to school.
But he does teach some courses, just so you know. That's why. But, okay, so here's the thing that just occurred to me to try to ask you. So I understand if you look at me and go, why didn't you tell me that before? But my question is, let's say that you get a call from a medical practice that is, they own their own building and it's two stories and nice-sized building because they have, let's say, 14 providers. And they say, we're sure we're secure, which we all know is, that's like, ding, ding, ding. There's an alert. What would be the first things that you would do if you were going to break into any of these sites?
Sure. We're talking about physical entry?
Well, yeah, or, yeah. Yeah. How would you do that?
The first thing I'm going to do is find somewhere that I can watch them for a few days without them seeing me. I'm going to get to know their patterns, who goes in when, things I would be looking for. Do they have a cleaning company that comes after hours? Cleaning companies are always great ways in. Do they have back doors, utility doors that they leave open, unlocked, a smoking area people are in and out of that could be unlocked? Those are the kinds of things I'd be looking for. So I'm going to start with recon. I'm going to case it, figure out what's normal so that I can come up with a scenario that looks normal to them.
All right. So just like any other thief.
Unfortunately, yes.
So you're going to do the recon. What if you're going to try to get in? All you have is you found their IP address and you're going to try to do it remotely. Like you could be anywhere in the world and you stumble upon an IP that's tied to what you know is a medical practice.
Sure. So same thing. I'm going to use tools to enumerate that IP address, figure out what ports open, what services are running on it, see what's there, if that's a way in. If I'm trying to get computer systems, social engineering is going to be my way.
Okay.
It's easier to target people than technology.
There we go. Perfect. See, you didn't even know where I was going, and you answered it exactly the way I wanted, William. I love that. All right, so let's talk that social engineering piece using this same example, because so many times, and you can tie in real world events, but so many times I don't think that these businesses understand that they can be a target and how easy it is to target them.
Right. I think the reason, and this is sort of the talk I give when I speak at conferences, I think one of the reasons that social engineering is so effective is I think humans have this tendency and this desire to trust and to help.
Yeah.
And if you go back to when, how you're raised, right? You're taught to trust your parents. You're taught to trust law enforcement. You're taught to trust your teachers, your doctor, people like that, which plays into the authority part of social engineering. And then you're taught to help people, be kind, be helpful. And you're also taught to reciprocate kindness. Someone holds the door open for you. What are you supposed to say? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Somebody gives you something. What are you supposed to say? Thank you. Mm-hmm. You do me a favor. I'm going to look for a way to do you a favor. It's sort of ingrained in our society so that when we grow up, social engineering's play on this same tendency and habits we formed. If I'm targeting, which kind of gets into the emotions of social engineering, which I have a few that we find work well. If I'm targeting, say, a company in Israel, using the authority type scenario is not going to work. Because in Israel, they're brought up to question authority. Like when you join the military, you're required to find things that your general above you is doing bad. Wow. And they can vote out a general and replace them if they want.
Interesting.
It's part of the reason their businesses are so innovative is they're taught to be free thinkers. So the authority scenario doesn't work well there. Now, if I'm targeting a company in Korea, that's their culture. You don't say one word against authority. So I think the way we are raised and our tendencies sort of play into that.
All right. So in the South where you live, you know what you're getting. Yeah. Come on in, y'all. Let me make you something to eat.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's one of the tough parts about it is, you know, especially in the South, you know, we have that culture of everybody's so nice to everybody else. And, you know, we're always bending over backwards to do things around here for people. And that will bite you hard when it comes to cybersecurity.
Right. And then the other factor I think plays huge is, I'm not a psychologist. This is one of my own theory. I think people respond to situations one of two ways, logically or emotionally. And I think this is supported by even when you look at the military, special forces, how are they trained? They're trained so they get accustomed to that pressure, to those situations so that they don't respond out of emotion. So they can keep a cool head and respond logically. They're shot at, they get to go through all kinds of stress so they get used to it and they are trained to think logically. Mm. And as a social engineer, this is what I do. I try to get you to respond to something out of emotion. Because when you respond to emotion, you don't think straight. You do things and you come back the next day saying, why did I do that? That was a mistake. Mm-hmm. Now, if I were to rate the level of emotion from a 1 to a 10, when I create scenarios, I'm trying to keep that response between a 3 and a 6. I want to keep this on the low end. Because if I cause too much emotion, you're going to get worked up and then you're going to realize something could be up, right? Mm-hmm. When you see the Nigerian prince has sent you $4.5 million. Sure, that might cause a lot of emotion.
What are you trying to tell me, William? I'm not a millionaire after all.
Or you get an email, the IRS is coming to pick you up in 30 minutes. Sure, you might skip a heartbeat, but when you start causing that kind of emotion, people are going to pick up on it. So I try to craft scenarios that keep that on the lower end of that emotion. So they still respond, but not enough that they even notice. So I'm making it more of a speed bump in your day-to-day, something that semi-ordinary. It doesn't seem totally weird. It causes emotion. Yeah, you respond out of it in a minute, but you don't come back to think about it.
Mm-hmm. So that's how when people say, how do I recognize a phishing email? I always say, if something causes an emotional response,
yep.
then you should evaluate it as a phishing email.
And that's all the details. Tip I give when that's what I always say at the end of my talks. If it caused you any kind of emotion, stop, do something else, come back and read it in 5 minutes. When that emotion dies down, because you're going to likely see it.
Yeah. So don't respond to anything that creates any level of an emotional response.
Yeah, and then when we talk about emotion, the ones that we typically see most effective are fear, excitement, sympathy, ego stroking, and authority. Those are typically the five we incorporate. Fear is you're afraid something. Your account's about to be locked down. Your account's about to be closed. Excitement, you've won something. A scenario I use a lot at companies that have in-house dev teams, developing teams, is, and this works great if it's the end of the year when we're doing the assessment, which most assessments happen in quarter four somehow.
I know. I can't figure that out.
We'll say, you guys have done great this year. We couldn't have done it without you. We want to put you guys in a raffle. We're going to give away a few free iPhones to the dev team because you guys have done such a good job. They will fill the form out, log into my fake site, and share it to their coworkers for me. And this is excitement.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, sympathy. If, and I do a ton of recon. So if I'm doing an engagement, 80% of the time is recon. I want to know you. I want to know what you like for breakfast, what you eat for lunch, what restaurants you go to. I want to know your children's names, your dog's names, the parks you go to, anything I can know about you, what kind of furniture you have in your house, because it's all opportunity for me to send you something, mm-hmm. what your side hustles are, et cetera. Now, if I find you like animals, you're constantly tweeting about the Animal Foundation, saving this animal, adopt this animal, et cetera, I see you have a sympathy toward animals. And I've done this before. So now when I'm ready to target you, and I've done a recon, I figure out you have a German Shepherd. Okay. Now, when I'm ready to target you, maybe I call you up on the phone. I'm going to play an audio of a dog barking in the background. I'm going to just casually say, oh, I'm sorry, that's my German Shepherd. He won't be quiet. Now, I have played on your sympathy for animals. I know you have a German Shepherd, and people like people that are like us. Mm-hmm. Right? If you think about it, when you go to any kind of social event, conference, et cetera, and you find out you know someone else knows, what happens? You get excited, all right? You went to the same high school, you get excited. It's this thing we have. We like people that are like us. So I'm going to become like you. I have a dog barking in the background, and now we have this common ground, and maybe I start a quick mention of some dog foundation or something. I got them from the dog foundation. And now we've got a common cause, and I can start to social engineer you. So that's sympathy. Authority is pretty obvious, right? I'm your boss. Someone, I need you to do something. We're used to taking orders, especially in the workplace. I need you to do this. Yep, I'll do it. You're busy, which is a huge issue, which is a side note here. We've been doing social engineering engagements for a few years, and it was amazing how much more successful we were in 2020 when everybody was at home than the years before. And it's even slumped down after that. It was pretty amazing.
Really?
But everybody's busy. I want to get my work done so I can get home, and I become your boss. I need you to do this. It only takes 5 minutes. Because sure, they're going to do it for me in a heartbeat. Ego stroking, something that makes you feel important. So a great example of this was a few years ago, we did an assessment for a company, and they handle some back-end transactions for banks. We did our recon. We looked at their website and found they had an announcement that they had been given some award by a state's banking association. So I looked at that. The only certain employees were in scope for us to target. One of them was the director of marketing. So I sent a fish. We were from the Wall Street Journal. We saw the announcement. I was working on a column and I wanted to comment about that award. We were doing some art columns on different types of banking awards and companies that were doing a good job. And of course, this makes her feel important, and she's happy to be helping, and she's helped us do it. She even got someone else involved, another person. She sent it to them. The firewall was blocking the link to our fish site at this company, and the person took their phone off Wi-Fi and did it on their phone to bypass this thing blocking it because they felt important.
Wow.
So those are typically the five emotions that we use. They work.
Yeah. So exactly. Emotional response, whether it's a positive or negative, that's the tool. And when people tell us nobody's going to work that hard to get into our systems, why do we even need to think about that? How often do criminals, today we see more of this, of, all right, we found a company and now we're going to target it for whatever reason. There's more targeted attacks. And how do you get people to understand that this is a real thing for a small business?
I think the days of we're small, we're not a target, are quickly coming to an end. Hackers are having a heyday with big companies for sure. I mean, we see it in the news. It's ridiculous. Simply because they're making simple mistakes. They don't have their basics covered. And that's how the bad guys are getting. But I think this is sort of my own theory. They're sort of getting to the end of their big target list. And now they're moving down the chain a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a few small companies, and it's very interesting to see how 5 years ago they were getting the mass phishing, mass email, and they are getting quite targeted now.
Right.
Now, for this one company, they're on the larger side of small. They're a $100 million company in the manufacturing space, but the attacks they are getting are actually pretty sophisticated. They even had one incident where someone was phished and they sat in their email inbox for several months waiting for the right communication. Wow. And then when they were working on a deal with their bank for a loan, they interjected themselves into the conversation and tried to redirect the money.
Wow.
They had been in that account for months. Now that shows dedication. They had redirect rules, all kinds of things in there. That's not a mass target. That's we want something from you. And with the way software is sophisticating, even what we used to call targeted attacks are becoming what everyone is getting. They're becoming more sophisticated. They can automate a lot of this, right? They can just create rules that look for keywords and alert them. So they don't have to log in your email every day when they have access and check it. They can set up rules to alert them and create actions.
So ideally, getting into your email and people fall for these things and they're sitting there like reading all your email, which, by the way, I don't know about you guys, but people always worry about somebody reading all your communications. It could be happening because you fell for this. You got excited about a free sub sandwich or something, and they're sitting there.
Well, you posted a photo of your new office and you got an email about your warranty on that hutch about to expire.
Yes. So the way
that's one I've done.
So the way that you're getting this information, how do you, back to our example, how would you figure out who to target at said small business, medical practice, and then find that information out about them?
Sure. So depending on the scope of our engagement, sometimes we have a list of only these 50 employees are in scope. Sometimes it's whoever you can get. We're not giving you email addresses. You figure it out.
So you figure it out.
So what I typically do is if I'm trying to figure out, I know nothing about you. First thing I'm going to do is visit your website, look for a form that I can fill out and get a response. Because once I get a response to an email, now I know what format you're using in your email address. Uh-huh. If you respond to me and maybe it's first name dot last name, maybe it's first initial dot last name. Once I get a response, I know your format. I'm good to go. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to LinkedIn and I'm going to find all the employees for your company, find their first and last names and make email addresses of them. All right. So we just did this for it was a bank in Saudi Arabia. We had an engagement and I found about, 500 employees on LinkedIn. Using this method, I got 300 valid email addresses. That's plenty for me. At least a few of these 300 are going to fall for my fish. When we do phishing, side note, we typically have about a 50 to 60% click rate. They click on a link in a fish. We typically capture credentials about 35% of the time.
Wow.
And we typically bypass multi-factor authentication 15 to 20% of the time.
Wow.
Wow. So. Well, that makes me feel great, William.
Now, back to our recon. So once I know email addresses, now I start building a dossier and I spend a lot of time doing reconnaissance. It's days, week sometimes I probably don't even get paid well enough for the engagement because I spend so much time on recon to be ready. So LinkedIn is always a great place to start because people are posting their titles. Yeah, I know what your title is. I can get an idea of what you're doing at the company. Some people post about their job activities, what they do for the company. I work in the IT department. I'm an expert with Citrix. We use this and that. And my specialties are this and that. I can get all of that from your bio. And then I start cross-referencing. Okay, you work in this department and you're an IT technician. He works and he's the director of IT and he's an IT manager. So now I can start building a chain of command. I know who's boss, which when I target using the authority technique, if possible, I try to become someone who is not at the same location as my target because they can't just run to their office and say, hey, that email you sent me, whatever, whatever. And I try to become one that is at least one level above them, not their boss, but their boss's boss. For one, they're going to, quote, cower faster and do whatever you want to please them. And two, they're not going to be as likely to go to their boss and say, hey, that project you want me to work on, whatever, whatever. And I get all of that information from social media. Okay, so I glean LinkedIn. The websites, a lot of times they'll post who their board members are, who their leadership is. That's all great information. I go to the company's Twitter page. I look for recent announcements, events they have gone to, are going to. Those are all ways to create a scenario. Say they're going to event. I can see an email. Oh, we forgot to have you sign this one paper. That paper I send you to sign is payloaded. Now, once I'm on Twitter, as an example, I go look at all the followers that company has because part of those followers are going to be those employees. And then if I can figure out who the employees are, I can go look at their Twitters and start harvesting them for intelligence. Instagram, everybody likes to post about their lives on Instagram. You'd be shocked how many, this is my desk workspace, this is my badge, or we're out to lunch, and there's a badge on the table in the background, things of that nature you can find on Instagram. I'll spend some time on Facebook. A lot of people have their profiles private, so there's not a whole lot you can gather from Facebook. Sometimes you can see workplace, where they were born, which is interesting because that could be passwords. I'm on an engagement right now. I'm still in the middle of, actually. And I actually found on Facebook that two of my targets are related. One's a grandmother. So I'm working on some scenarios to take advantage of that. Social media is huge. Occasionally, if I'm trying to dig further into someone, I'll use a reverse people finder. I can find addresses, relationships, marriage status, etc. If you've recently had a divorce, I can find that. And there's all kinds of scenarios I can come up with, depending on what I find on you. Mm-hmm. Like one guy, I think I told you about this a couple of years ago. He was actually a security analyst at this company, a SOC analyst. He had taken a security certification and failed the week before our engagement started. And he posted about this on Twitter. So I said, interesting. So I went, bought a domain very similar to the real companies where he took the certification, just had a hyphen in it. And I sent him an email, said, oh, we are so sorry you failed the test, but we realized we gave you the wrong testing environment. Everyone who took the test between X date and Y date, we gave them the wrong testing environment. We're really sorry. Please don't make a big deal of this. We're going to give you a free retake. Just fill out this form when you want to schedule it. We're going to give you a retake and some extra bonuses. The form was a PDF that was payloaded. I had done some other reconnaissance and called up some people and found out what kind of antivirus they were using. So I knew that this payload would bypass that antivirus. He's a security analyst. He downloads the PDF, opens the PDF, and boom, we had a remote session on a security analyst's computer.
So did he pass?
I don't know. I didn't keep up with it after that. I didn't care.
That makes you feel good, doesn't it? So
yeah.
Really and truly, though, as you know, technology can only do so much, you know, and we have said from the beginning that really cybersecurity is about the people as far as they're the ones that are using the applications and it's constantly expanding and so on and so forth. But we also see, particularly in small businesses, everybody's going to the cloud. And David can tell you, I don't have to worry about cybersecurity because everything's in the cloud. How many times have we heard that?
Well, look at the announcement from Azure. This was it today or yesterday? Did you guys see that? Azure misconfigured. They introduced a vulnerability in a update in 2019 that opened pretty much all Cosmos DB databases have been publicly readable since then, and they just now realized it. Like, you can't trust the cloud. And I hate to say it, but you can't definitely can't trust Microsoft. So this phishing engagement I'm on right now, the social engineering campaign, they are using G Suite. And I'll typically semi-cringe when I see this a company is using G Suite, because it's so much harder to defeat G Suite than Office 365.
I'm sorry, it's Google Workspace. Don't get messed up.
Right. One of my fishes, Google realized this was a phishing site. They went back and emailed everyone who got an email from that domain anytime in this campaign, telling them, we recently figured out that was a phishing site. You have an email from them. Microsoft never does anything like that.
Well, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, but the sad part, though, is that most companies, you know, go toward Microsoft and Office 365. I mean, we, in our IT company, we made a shift because we were almost exclusively Google for the longest time, but we kept having these headbutting sessions with people. You know, I've used Outlook since the 80s and I'm not changing. And so we finally gave in, was like, okay, we've got to shift to using Microsoft because we don't know it well enough, because we are so ingrained in Google, because I don't say everybody, but 90% of our clients who were coming in were Microsoft, and getting them to move to Google was painful. We had one company, we talked them to moving to Google. I thought they were going to fire us afterwards. They hated it so much. And they had one particular employee that had this one particular plugin that could only work in Outlook. And they put up such a fight about this that we had to shift them back to Microsoft at our cost. So a 2-month project to get them away from it. We had to do a 2-month project to get them back on it.
Right, and I don't mean to endorse Google, and I'm not saying Google is infallible, because get fishes through Google, but it's just interesting how different companies prioritize different
things. So yeah, I agree with you. That's the reason we were on it, was because we felt like it was a more secure and easier to use product. But it's just people aren't looking at that. They're just looking at, well, I've always used Outlook. I want to continue using Outlook. Some people don't even know you can do anything else but Microsoft.
Well, I mean, you can use Outlook with Google Workspace, but to me, I just don't want to be using the number one targeted product.
Yeah. Well, you can, but there's problems with Outlook installed, period. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I don't. Yeah. The fewer apps, the easier to support.
It doesn't even work good on its own platform. when you're trying to cross platforms, you know, Google is using one thing and Microsoft using another, and they don't, you know, your structure is going to be different. So you're in Outlook and it looks one way. You log into Google on your phone and now it's like, where's my stuff? Where's my folders? They're not lined up the same. And yeah, it's just problematic to try to do those together. But anyway, that's kind of a side note.
Yeah.
Like, pick your poison. don't mix them.
And back to what we were talking about, reconnaissance. So a little story. You'll like this one. So this was a pen test I did in November. I was working with a team. I was in charge of social engineering. My job was basically, if they had a payload they needed brought in, it was a red team engagement to fish them, get this payload in the system. The company had multi-factor authentication. Not a problem, because I can bypass MFA most of the time if I want to. And I was actually kind of getting bored of calling people up. I'm IT, whatever. We're going to send you an authorization code, and they give it to me. So I wanted to try something different. So my goal for this engagement was to bypass MFA using text messages. So it was a 2-week engagement, and I started setting the stage early on. So I fake email, very similar to their real one, started a week before Thanksgiving, sending announcements. Thanksgiving holiday, we're going to be doing some maintenance. Some systems are going to be down. Be sure that you get any emails sent before that, whatever, whatever. A couple people I sent a fish. It was because of our maintenance, we're going to have to work on your computer. Schedule some time on this calendar. And it was a real calendar, and it was a real Microsoft, but it sent them through my phishing site, my fake Office 365 login. Uh-huh. So we fished a bunch of people on that, and I've been setting the groundwork. Now, come Thanksgiving Day, we sprung the trap. They were already conditioned we're having maintenance on Thanksgiving, right? Uh-huh. Which most companies do. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. They weren't having maintenance. What we did was everyone that we had fished up until that point, come Thanksgiving Day, we called them up, sent text messages. We've had issues with our server upgrades. People are getting locked out. We're going to have to re-authenticate you so you don't lose your emails permanently. And they're trying to cook their turkeys, do whatever they're doing, and they don't want to bother with us. Mm-hmm. So they're, okay, fine. They get their phones and they, okay, we're going to send you the code. Just send that. Oh, good. It looks like you're re-authenticated. You're not going to lose your emails. Bye. I got to go.
Oh.
Five people we bypassed MFA on that Thanksgiving Day doing that.
Wow.
And then the next day, we did the SMS method where we sent out an announcement via text message. You've been automatically enrolled in this company name's new Microsoft announcement system. Reply yes to continue or no if you don't want to join. We sent this to five people. Four people replied yes. When they replied yes, we would send another text message. We'd log into their account with their credentials we had. We would say, and then so they get a text message, right, from Office 365. And then we would say, please respond with the code we just sent you to authenticate, to validate your account. They would give us that code, and now we're in their two-factor authentication. So we got four out of five targets that way, too.
Wow. It's brutal. It's brutal. But, I mean, it's how it works, you know? And and so many people would think, well, nobody's going to try to trick me on Thanksgiving, but we're trying to get the word out, that we're recording this right before Labor Day, and we're trying to get the word out because the holidays are when they attack. Those are the most common times.
That is one of the reasons we don't do incident response. I want to be able to set my schedule. When it's holidays and weekends, I want off.
The incident response teams we work with, they know it's a holiday. They have to take their time off when it's not a holiday.
Yeah. Every July 4th for the last 3 years, I've had someone call, we got ransomware, we got this.
Yep.
That's when they do it.
Mm-hmm. And it is a stressful
time.
Especially
if it's a Friday holiday.
Oh, yeah. Get that long weekend in there.
Kaseya.
Oh, yeah.
It was a Friday, July 4th holiday.
Yeah. Actually, I think when we were recording for that Friday before, Donna, I believe you and I said, I wonder what's going to happen over the next week. Because we knew something was coming.
Yeah, it always is. So here we are staring down the Labor Day holiday, knowing something's coming.
Yeah. Well, you get into Q4 and that's all it is holidays.
I know. So, as soon as you get to the end of October, it really begins to push hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that those folks that getting them to understand that this stuff really does happen and they really do research and target your people. I mean, they've made billions of dollars on their crimes. Now they can hire people your job is to go find information on companies, the employees, and then we tie it back to the companies and then we can go after them essentially is it, right?
I mean, even that story on another podcast, Darknet Diaries.
Oh, yeah.
You guys familiar with that one?
Yeah, Jack's been on here.
So the story a couple of weeks ago about the Twitter handle.
Uh-huh.
Did you guys hear that one?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the criminal made $1,000 off this, but he harassed this guy for 3 months to get him to give in and turn over his account. So they're willing to put in effort for not much.
Yeah. Well,
and all he did was he got that account and he sold it for $1,000.
Mm-hmm. See, to me, it's, I think it's going to be a rude awakening to a lot of people who sit back and think, I don't have to worry about this. I don't have anything they need. I'm too small. I'm this, I'm that. I just don't see there's a distinction anymore, at least from a criminal standpoint, about they don't know any of those. They just decide they're going to target you for whatever reason. And so many now, that it could be, you know, I don't like that you talk about politics. It could be, I don't like you sound Southern. Who knows?
Or another one recently has been they hack the insurance companies, find out who has cyber insurance, and they go target them because they know they'll pay.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a perfect one.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. Oftentimes, they don't care what you have or don't have. They just know that there's a high likelihood they'll get some type of payment because your insurance is just going to pay.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pressure now for them to not attack hospitals. And, you know, we're going to see that more and more, which is still going to push them down further into the practices themselves because the information is still the valuable information.
Right. And when you think about their structure, criminal infrastructure, oh, I was talking about this at the summit we just had with EJ Hilbert.
Yeah.
He's a former FBI agent. He was a cyber investigator. And I even talked about it with our local head of cyber for our region. We had a little off-camera discussion. I was talking with him. He's the lead cyber investigator at the FBI for the Charlotte branch. And these criminals, so we have seen them. There's this fine line, right? You cross this line, the government's going to come down on you. Mm-hmm. A lot of these are Eastern European countries, Russia, Ukraine, whatever. You cross this line, those governments are going to come down on you. And we've seen them getting really close to that line lately, right? We saw this with Colonial, and we saw it with the meatpacking. And if you cross that line, the government's going to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they've tested their limits a little bit, but they don't want to cross that line because it's going to end up bad for them.
Right.
They want to stay in business, so they're not going to cross the line. Hospitals, because of COVID and everything, hospitals are now over that line. Other industries, critical industries, are over that line. We've even seen some announcements, whatever you say about politics, if it should have been done, don't touch these 16 industries, right?
Right.
From the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Those are over the line. So they can't target those. They're losing targets who are now over that line because they don't want to bring the wrath of the government down on themselves. So who's left? The small and mid-sized companies.
Mm-hmm. And you know, in healthcare, you know, there's this line where everybody's like, oh, they're not going to attack healthcare. No, that gets to the hospitals. It is not a random medical practice. It is not the company that supplies services to them. They're still in scope. You know, they don't know, like a IT company, they don't know who their clients are necessarily. They don't know that they're about to, you know, spread it to all these other kinds of entities. They're staying away from hospitals. They aren't. The government's not going to come down on them on attacking two or three small medical practices, you know. And I'm talking, you know, small is all relative compared to a health system and a hospital. Pretty much any independent medical practice is small. So that's the word we need to get out, just like you're mentioning is. You're coming up. The funnel is pointing more at you than...
Right.
So, David, you got more you want to get out of William? We could trigger a bunch of stories. That's clear.
I was going to say I probably could talk to him all day long, but I know we're pushing on the hour mark. Yeah. So I want to be respectful of his time. But yeah, I always love hearing these stories, and I'll be quite honest with you. I get a little jealous because I'm like, I want to be the one out there doing this kind of work.
I know.
I'll admit I'd say that's probably less than half the work we get to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when we do that, we have to spend all the time writing reports, debriefing customers, mm-hmm. training customers, risk assessments.
Oh,
I even tell people who want to get into pen testing, you're only going to be hacking, doing what you're doing 30% of the time. So just get prepared.
Yeah. That's kind of how most of the exciting jobs are, you know, you know, years ago, some of you know this, I was in law enforcement and that was, you know, way back in the day, I'm watching cops on TV and I'm like, oh man, that looks so much fun, you know, chasing people and all that. And so in the early 90s, I got into law enforcement and it was the same thing. It was, you know, hours and hours and hours of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror. And a lot of paperwork. And a lot of paperwork. And then, you know, I eventually became a shift supervisor, and that's all it was paperwork. And I was like, man, I hate this job. What happened to the fun?
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's the same way in pen testing. So if you ever need somebody to help social engineer and not do paperwork, call me.
We're here for you.
Yeah. So. Yep.
Maybe if I get one of those night entry jobs, I'll call you.
Yeah. We're
one of those ones where we have to climb up on the roof and go down through an air duct or something.
I don't know. I'm getting too old for all that. But
what is it? The story that was just on Darknet Diaries where the guy fell off the roof and broke his heels.
Yeah. Oh,
broke his heels.
Yeah. Ow. Yeah.
And he was trying to, was it duck? So the cop drummed by a wind seal or
something. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't see him when he was.
I've actually had the police called on me a time. So,
yeah. No, I could probably infiltrate the police easier than anything else because I know. And know all the ins and outs of that.
Well, sad to say, someone on my team was at a company. They were doing some helping them with some IT stuff, and they were doing working with the police on investigation of some tire slashings that were happening out in the parking lot. So they put the footage on a USB, took it to the police department. The detective stands up from his computer, says, "Here, plug it in my computer, put it on my desktop," and leaves the room.
Wow. So,
So there we go.
Now you know what we mean by zero trust. It's not just an architecture, it's a way of life. Oh, man. Definitely. William, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, tell people how they can find you.
I'm typically on LinkedIn.
I know you are. You told us you are. You're trying to find everybody's stuff.
We have a YouTube channel. We publish videos semi as frequent as we can, trying to help small and mid-sized companies. Our website, www.cyberx.tech. And then we have our InfoSec Academy, which is where we have a membership helping small companies, giving them resources, templates, guides, monthly training, et cetera. So that's where we are.
Yeah, right. And you do, we don't know how you manage to do it, but you frequently do some really great courses, seminars, whatever. Your Ransomware Live was really a lot of fun. We were part of that.
Yeah, that went really well.
Yeah, and I loved it. And that panel discussion, that was so nice to be on. And you're always doing that. So we recommend you follow William because he's always offering some really cool small business training and tools. And many times it's freely available if you show up.
So last tip for our listeners, if you go to your LinkedIn profile and you see that William has viewed your account, be worried.
Yeah, very worried.
Oh, if you've hired me, I can't do anything illegal.
Did you wink? Did I see you wink when you did that? All right, folks, thanks for listening today. Be sure to share this podcast out to your favorite social media sites where we will find you and hack you. And remember, for Don and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.